Welcome to Custer Stadium. This was not the event that I envisioned being the first one to be able to use our new press box. However, I'm glad it's finished so that we can use it. So I'm Chuck McCauley, superintendent of Bartlesville Schools. And I want, first of all, welcome you, give you a brief update of what our plan is here for the next few minutes. Thank you for taking time to attend and participate and give us your input. What we're going to do is we're going to share some information with you. We have a couple of microphones set up. One is right here, right about the 45-yard line, and one is right over here. So when we're finished with giving our presentation, those of you that would like to make a comment, ask a question, we welcome you to do so. Once that time is over, our administrative team, which is behind me, they're going to spread out on the field, because realizing that some of you may have some specific questions, you know, your child's at a school and you want to talk to them. So I appreciate you guys that have face coverings to come down, and we'll keep our social distancing and so we can have some interaction. We're going to do this again this evening at 8:30, and the sun will be down, so probably a little bit more pleasant, but I appreciate you guys taking time to join us today. So where we are, we're trying to be as open and transparent as we prepare for the start of school as we can be. And this is another step in that process. We have four different committees that have been working hard to prepare plans. We have one that's focused on our elementary schools. We have another committee that's been focused on our secondary schools. We have one that is focused on our PPE for all. And then we have a fourth committee that is focused on our pandemic response committee, which is on the operational side, policies, procedures. And then tied with that, obviously with our special education, that crosses over into all the different types of committees. So we've developed a plan. And all those groups, there's about 80 different people that have been involved in that. We've also consulted our medical professionals in terms of local pediatricians, the state, been on video conferences with the state epidemiologist, also the executive director of Tulsa County Health Department as well. So where we are, we have a plan. As you know, last week, we shared that plan with all of our employees. We gave and also gave them a survey, just like we surveyed our community. We, with our staff, we gave them a couple days to review the plan. We had a virtual webinar for all employees on Thursday, so answering to share information, to answer any questions from them. Tweaked our plan some, and as you know, we've released that plan to everybody on Monday, so everyone has access to what our draft, the latest draft of the plan is. We are here to get input from the community today and this evening, with the goal being at the Monday, this upcoming Monday on July 20th, we have a school board meeting. At that point, hopefully to finalize what we project, what our plan is going to be like on August 13th. But please know, even though when we have a plan on July 20th, these things change. Obviously, if more information comes out in the coming weeks, we'll obviously do the best we can to do what makes sense and be open and transparent with you as we move forward. And the big thing that we need to do to prepare from you, we'll need our parents to commit after that July 20th board meeting. Those that are interested in a virtual option, we'll need them to enroll in that. And they can do that online by July 27th. And the reason we have that deadline is because we have to work on our staffing plan. What's the best way we can staff that for our students and for our staff? Okay, so that kind of gets us to up to the current spot. And what we'll do now is I'm going to turn this over to Granger Metter, our Executive Director of Technology and Communications. He also chairs our Pandemic Response Committee, and he's going to go through the plan, then we'll open it up for questions and comments. So, Mr. Metter?
Good morning. I'm going to start out by talking about our in-person protections, because that's our largest challenge, is how do you have school in these conditions. And the big concept to remember is layered mitigation practices, meaning that the more protective layers we can put in place through our practices and our procedures, the better off we'll be. Because we know that no procedure will be followed perfectly. No layer of protection will offer full protection. So you just want as many backups as you can get. And so one thing that is used is temperature screenings based on input, particularly from Dr. Dart, who is the head of the health department in Tulsa. We will be doing mandatory staff temperature screenings at the site. He does not recommend doing that for all students, mainly because a lot of students are asymptomatic, and the very process of trying to run every student through a screening can actually put them at greater risk. However, we will have temperature guns at every site, and so anyone who has a concern can refer a student to quickly get a temperature check and check that out. And we just have the standard procedures for that. If you have a temperature, as has always been at school, we want you to go home. And so we will put the student in a friendly but isolated area to wait for pickup. On symptom screenings, we will have the similar process. We ask parents to be aware of how their children are doing and if they have any of the symptoms that are associated with COVID-19, that they not come to school and instead engage in distance learning, which will be available to them through packets if they don't have devices in hand, or through devices for many students. We will have site screening for all visitors. Visitors won't come into the building very often in terms of beyond the office, except for ones that are trained and agree to abide by very strict restrictions. And most of them will just check in through lobby guard and make sure they go through a screening there. Face coverings is one of the big topics, of course. It's one of the best ways to protect people from the spread of COVID-19. And so one thing we'll be providing for all students and all staff is a neck gaiter. I'll try and do a little show and tell here, but I was a physics teacher for years, not an elementary teacher, so my skills at this are limited. This is not the actual neck gaiter that we'll have, but it's a Bruins one. And so a neck gaiter looks kind of like a scarf. And you want to double it up to get the two layers for a good protection. And then you slip it over your head. Pardon my lack of hair. And the nice thing about a neck gaiter for kids especially is that this way it's not going onto a desk. It's not getting lost as easily. It's staying around their neck, we hope. And then you have to learn how to use it properly. You want to have both layers, and you want to pull it up from the sides, not the front where it's all contaminated. So this is a learning process for everyone who uses a neck gaiter. But you would pull it up like that over your nose and your mouth. And ideally, you would wear this all the time. And if you're in school, you would have this up, except when you're eating or drinking. As I said, that's the ideal. We live in reality. So we realize that this will come up and come down. And we'll be working with kids, especially elementary kids, to learn how to use their gaiter properly. We'll also provide those to staff. We also have other options, because the neck gaiter is not always going to be ideal for everyone. We have cloth masks, so if someone requests a cloth mask, they can have that. That's what I was wearing earlier, and what you see a lot of people out here wearing is a cloth mask. We also have some disposable masks, and those will be kind of handy for, like, buses. We know that when students are on board the bus, the students who ride the bus, that's a high-density environment, even though we'll try and spread out as much as we can. So we'll have all the windows down to try and get more airflow, and we will have disposable masks on every bus so that as a child boards who doesn't have a face covering, they can put on that mask, wear it throughout the bus ride, wear it off the bus and on into school, and then we'll use that mask that day at school if they need to. The idea is maybe they forgot their gaiter, and this way we've got something for them to use that day. And then they would use that on their way back out of the school at the end of the day. Another kind of mask we all hear a lot about are N95s. These are harder to get. And N95s are harder to wear. And it's not just that they're a little more uncomfortable, but to wear them properly, you have to take certain precautions. So these are really for medical workers and high-risk individuals. And so in our school system, we have a limited number of N95 masks we'll be making available to high-risk employees. And with an N95, you have to learn how to put it on and get a good seal all the way around the edges. In my case, I would need to shave my beard. to get rid of any facial hair that interferes with it, and so on. So this is an option for high-risk individuals that we do have some supply of. And then we also have, these are the disposable masks, and if you've had COVID testing, you may have encountered this, that these are actually, in general, better than a cloth mask. Even though they might seem rather insubstantial, these are blown fiber masks. They might call them surgical masks or medical masks. And they actually, because of the blown fiber in them, provide better protection from the virus and from your expelling the virus than a cloth mask. And we have a number of those. There's always a concern about people to say, I can't breathe in a cloth mask. And the answer is that most people can adapt pretty fast to using a cloth mask, but there are some cases where if you do not have good control of asthma, if you have mild or you have well-medicated asthma, cloth mask isn't a problem, but if you have severe asthma or it's not well-controlled or you have other breathing difficulties, you may need other options. And we have face shields for that. And so this is what a face shield is like. And I expect a lot of teachers will make use of a face shield because it's easier to talk to the class and present at length to the class while you're wearing a face shield. And for high-risk individuals who aren't comfortable wearing an N95 mask, a disposable surgical mask and a face shield is the next best thing. We do not offer extensive protection from the sun, however. It's Oklahoma. One thing that everyone wants to know is what's required. We require the face coverings for all staff, and we require face coverings for all secondary students. It's part of the dress code. It'd be handled like a dress code issue with respect, looking for ways to help you out. When I was a teacher, usually when you had a kid out of dress code, it was a matter of saying, you're out of dress code. Take them out in the hall, have a polite conversation. The kid would say, oh, and then boom, they'd be back into dress code because they always had whatever that they were supposed to have with them, was my experience. So it's just a matter of working with kids where they're at. In elementary school, it is much more challenging. We're following the advice from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which says that pre-kindergarten, trying to do facial coverings is a huge challenge and might actually be more problematic than it's worth, because of all the potential for infection where a student is constantly handling the mask and not wearing it properly. As kids get older, they can learn and be trained to use a face covering safely. So their advice is that you keep working with children, and as you go on in elementary school, as they become older, you become more and more comfortable wearing the mask safely. So that would be our goal, is that we want everyone to wear a facial covering whenever possible. And we realize that with elementary kids, we have to work with them where they're at and try and help them out. One big encouragement we have for that is there is a difference in the response to COVID-19 based on age. We know that ages 9 and below experience the disease very differently than 10 and above. And so that gives us some hope that with the challenges of elementary students and facial coverings, that we won't be placing them or our staff at extreme risk. Physical distancing, you see us trying to practice that here, is 6 feet apart. Outside 6 feet apart, you're really in great shape. You don't even really need to wear a facial covering. But when you're in a school, 6 feet apart is not going to be practical in many situations. Many classrooms are simply not big enough to handle that, even with the reduced loads we know we'll have due to virtual enrollment. And then meals are a struggle and so on. So one thing we're looking at with our teachers is how can you rearrange your classroom to maximize physical distancing? We know from research that if you can get 3 feet between everyone, that makes a big difference. And then going to 6 feet kind of halves the risk from there. So that's the idea of maximize whatever distancing you can get. For meals, some meals will be taken in the classroom because that's a small group environment where you're not exposed to a lot of different people when that's practical. In other cases, we'll have them in our large environments, especially in our secondary schools, but we will mandate 6 foot physical distancing at all times during meals. And that means we'll be making use of unusual spaces for meals. So there'll be some meals in gyms, they'll be in the commons, they'll be in the cafeteria with all these marked spots to keep everybody apart while they're eating. And we're also, of course, limiting the duration of meals because the less time you spend in a large space with a bunch of other people, the safer you are. So we're following that general rule of trying to keep those to 30 minutes or less, which is our standard anyway. Meals will be boxed and eaten in those large areas with some lunch counts in the morning. And there will be some hot meals still available. There won't be assemblies or field trips. That won't be possible except in the virtual form. So there'll be virtual assemblies and virtual field trips. And we'll be using our classroom-based technology for that for in-person instruction. We have a projector or a large monitor in every room. Playgrounds will be available with physical distancing encouraged. This is based, again, from the American Academy of Pediatrics that stressed the importance of allowing use of playtime, but we will be requiring all students to wash their hands when they're done with recess, which is something I remember being told to do well after recess when I was a kid, and now it'll be like, oh, I'm really going to have to do it. We will have disinfection in the classrooms. Every classroom will have a disinfection fluid that's outlined in our full plan, and microfiber wipes, they'll be washed each night to help teachers clean things that kids share with each other, clean desks, and so on, along with our custodians hard at work on that. The four-page plan that was released publicly, that was the kind of the first snapshot of the plan, covers a lot of different topics. The full operating manual was linked at the end of it. So far, the manual's 30 pages and still growing. And if you read the entire operating manual, you're the kind of person that probably reads the manual for your car, and good on you. And it has lots of details, and you're welcome to delve through it. But what I will highlight from that manual is that there's the issue of the face coverings and the N95 masks. One thing I sometimes get is, will a mask be a danger to me in terms of my oxygen or my carbon dioxide? The answer is no. We've repeatedly seen, and I've done it myself with the pulse oximeter, that wearing a mask does not negatively affect your oxygen levels and is not a threat to you. If you had severe breathing problems, that's a different issue. We look at alternate face coverings, et cetera. One question we often get is about special education. We have some very special students who may have sensory issues and things like that that make it where they cannot wear a face covering. And in those cases, we have to work with those students on an individual basis to make sure that we're keeping them as safe as possible and the staff. The staff may have to have extra protection. There may have to be more spacing and so on. I'm going to go on and just quickly hit on a couple other topics. We do have in the full plan our responses when there are positive cases. So if we have a confirmed positive case with a student, we have a very detailed flow chart of what we do. Essentially, if we find the student was infectious and at school, you can expect that school to be closed for a day or two while we do a deep clean, I do a contact trace, and identify all the affected students who would and staff who would need to self-quarantine for 14 calendar days before coming back to in-person instruction. And during such quarantines, of course, we would have distance learning for those folks. So it would be with packets if they don't have a device handy, or with their device if their device is available to them in the situation they found themselves, or a way to check out devices to them if we can. And for staff members, we have a slightly different flow chart because they affect the site in different ways than a student does who tends to move through multiple large areas. But again, if we have a staff member who's positive, oftentimes we may see a one-day school shutdown so that we can again do deep cleaning and contact tracing and make sure the appropriate people are self-quarantined. And I mention that because we're trying to do our best to have in-person school, but we're going to have a lot of interruptions no matter what we do. We're going to have a lot of self-quarantines that we have to impose. And so all of our teachers are under the pressure of they have to be prepared to do some in-person instruction and switch on a dime to virtual instruction. Or have some of your kids who are self-quarantined in virtual instruction while you're still doing some in-person. So it's very challenging. And that means that our teachers are learning to try and align what they do virtually with what they're doing in person using tools such as Canvas, which is more familiar to our middle school and high school folks, And in elementary school, you'll be seeing a lot of something called Google Classroom, and it's like Canvas. It's a way to manage instruction and provide virtual lessons and provide materials in class or virtually. And so you'll see our elementary teachers making more and more use of Google Classroom and other services. We have added a lot of additional technology services this year, recognizing that we might have extended periods of distance learning for students, and we want to have additional support for them. One question I know that'll come up is, when would the district close its entirety? And there are several main triggers for that. One would be what we experienced before, an order from the state. That's pretty obvious. The other one, though, is we'll be looking at our own absenteeism rates due to COVID for students and for staff, because there's levels beyond which we just can't operate, and that'll trigger that we have to go into full-time distance learning. We'll also be paying close attention to the COVID alert system for the state. If our county goes into high risk, I would expect that Bartlesville will have to go full-time virtual learning. And we will have restrictions on our community partners, but they won't be banned. But we will have support for kids from Grand Lake Mental Health and some of our other partners once they go through appropriate training so they can be in the school safely with kids. School attendance will be adjusted radically in that, again, if a kid has a symptom of COVID-19, we don't want them at school. We want them distance learning instead. And so we wouldn't count that as a big chronic absenteeism issue, et cetera. And when you're virtual learning, a lot of people wonder, does that mean I'm seeing the teacher on the screen and stuff like that? Well, to some extent, but a lot of times it means you have a set of assignments in a week and you work through them as you can with your own schedule, with your own available daycare, with what parents can even manage. And then the grading is based on how much of that weekly plan was completed, and the attendance is based on the same kind of thing. So like, if a student completed 80% of the work in a week, by the time you would consider the deadline for that, then they might say they were at school 4 out of 5 days and so on. There is a list of different services in the big manual. There's additional parts to the big manual that will be fleshed out in the coming weeks about counseling and so on, and other aspects of this that we're dealing with. I think that's the main areas to talk about, and I think I'll turn it back over to the superintendent, and then we'll have a lot of Q&A, I'm sure.
And you're listening to the question and answer session number one and with the Bartlesville Public Schools.
Thank you, Granger. I ask our team here, they're going to spread out in case, after we get some input, if you want to come down and visit with someone specific. And I'm going to point them out just a little bit. Down on this end, we'll have our elementary principals and staff over here. In the middle, we kind of have our district-level administrators. And I want to point out just a few. On this end, Dr. Stephanie Curtis, if she'll raise her hand. She's been chairing our PPE committee. Thad Dilbuck as our director of athletics and activities. Jason Langham has chaired our secondary return to learn, also is our special services director. And then Diane Martinez over all of our elementary schools. May I have some specific questions for them? You guys probably recognize your principal, elementary, middle. We also have Heather Boyles out here. Heather, raise your hand. Heather teaches for us, but is also president of the Bartlesville Education Association, and she has been involved in all the meetings and planning. And then we have our high school staff over here on this end, if you have some questions or follow-up from them. So at this point, just a couple of things I wanted to mention before I open it back up to on transportation. And that's a question that we have. Our plan is to run our buses the way pretty close to what the way that we have with our windows open, like Mr. Metter said. That's one thing for parents. If your child doesn't really have to ride the bus, maybe it's a matter of convenience. If you could bring them yourself, that would give us obviously more space on the bus where we could be a little bit more socially distanced. We do plan to continue to offer our before and after school care at our elementaries. However, once again, if that's something that you don't have to have, we realize some folks need that, so that they can work and do things. But if you don't have to have that, we encourage you to maybe not start with that as we get started. Okay, so at this point, we have a couple of microphones. We have one over here and one on each side. So if there's any questions or input, we would welcome those at this time. Okay, we have one.
Will you be hiring more nurses so that you can have nurses full-time at each building?
At this time, we don't have a plan to hire more nurses at this time.
How will the kids handle the passing period between classes?
Talking about a secondary or an elementary?
Secondary, high school.
Yeah, so that may be some specific follow-up we get to with our high school administrators here, but basically we'll keep a similar bell schedule that we've had. So there will be times, obviously, where those are large groups that will be moving in the hallway. So really not much adjustment. That's obviously times where we'd really want to everyone to have their mask on.
What kind of masks are acceptable? Is a bandana okay or what?
As long as it's covering your nose and your mouth.
What happens if some kid decides he doesn't want to go to school that day and he says, oh, cough, cough, teacher, I'm feeling poorly. Does everybody in the class go home or how's that work?
The triggers that Mr. Metter outlined on our response plan are start when we have a confirmed case of an adult or a student. So once we have a confirmed case, that's when that contact tracing will start in terms of mandatory quarantines. Now we realize that, you know, we're in Oklahoma, it's the fall, allergy seasons. I mean, there may be times where kids may be sneezing, and so we're not going to assume everyone has the test. We're not going to be requiring that. What we ask of our parents, if your kid is not feeling well, keep them home. And so we will have ways, their attendance, if it is required for them to stay home or they feel like they should stay home, we want them to stay home. And then we will give them the opportunity to submit their work. That attendance won't be, because if they have that mandatory time where they have to stay home, that's not going to hurt them in terms of some kind of a truancy situation. We'll be able to, we're modifying our policy at this month. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Great questions.
We're going to disengage from the broadcast side here radio-wise. You can continue to watch this on K1TV.com, and you've been listening to our question and answer session.